Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Anshul Kashyap.
It's never the great players that became coaches. It's actually the average to good player that became coaches, right? Like I said, understanding the role is very important. This is the role. Have you carried the bag? Yes or no, right? And all right, what does it take to enable you to get this bag, get this thing across the field line? Do you understand that? And what kind of emotional support do I need to provide you to make all of this happen?
Welcome to The Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to The Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to The Conference Room. I'm joined by Anshul Kashyap. Anshul is the VP Sales Americas of cybersecurity vendor Axio. He is a sales leader with an extensive technology background and over 15 years experience serving customers in telco, finance, and the oil and gas sectors. He's had sales leadership positions with global leaders, including HP, IBM, Avaya, and Symantec, and hypergrowth vendors such as Thycotic, Riskosity, and now at Axio. And I'm delighted that he has found time to come and talk to us here in the conference room. Anshul Kashyap, good afternoon and welcome to the conference room.
Good afternoon, Simon. Thank you very much for having me at the conference room.
Appreciate it. It's a real pleasure. So every hero has an origin story and you'll hear of our story. So tell me, how did you get into sales and how did you evolve your career through sales management and now into leadership?
I started with a technical background in SAP functional consulting. If you ask any of my friends who at the point when we were in college or university or high school, they would say I was the farthest thing from a salesperson possible. You know, I was awkward in conversation, didn't know how to hold a conversation, both socially and in general, oftentimes. But I'd gotten into a technical line, which I picked up, and it was for, you know, SAP, for a partner of SAP's, and for ERP deployment, which I was very happy with, right? I got to travel the world, I got to do things as a functional consultant, but I quickly saw that there was these individuals coming in from both partners and SAP themselves selling to customers, right? And I was able to identify key gaps because I was the user of technology. And I was like, well, some of these things don't really align to what we need as a business because I've always had a simple focus to try to solve simple things, right? It's what's my job, what's my outcome? That's always naturally somehow I've always been that way. Well, what's my job? What's the outcome that my organization is looking for? So how do I best align? What do I best do to fulfill that or work on that? And when I would hear the sales pitches and, you know, across the board, it didn't matter whether it was a vendor or a reseller or partner, right? It would always be the same. It would generally always be the same. And I felt, you know, even though I wasn't high up, but they had no clue what my problems were or what outcomes I was looking for. And often we would buy the software and I would have to figure out how to get the outcomes afterwards. So I decided at some point that there's got to be like, it seems, you know, it was a financially lucrative career. It had good upside from both, you know, moving up, doing the things, being exposed to various industries and so forth. So there's natural intrigue for me. So I decided, hey, why don't I go on this path? Why don't I figure this out? And from there, I started as best possible as a pure outbound cold calling rep, you know, doing 150 calls a day, which is, I stuck to that as long as I could, right? And I did it for about 8 months or so. I had a very great manager who helped align me, who made me better, right? So that's one of the most fortunate things. As you said, I'm not exactly a hero. There's been heroes along the way that have actually helped me get here. So I had, my first hero was in that job. The first sales job I had as a cold calling rep, I had this phenomenal manager who I'm still in touch with, a guy by the name of Chan Thomas, right? Amazing manager. He very well aligned expectations, helped me manage outcomes, and said, hey, this is the path. This is what you need to be doing. This is what the expectations are. And I started to quickly understand from there, right? And after that, I went on to my first, let's say, proper job at Hewlett-Packard, HP, right? On their enterprise sector, on the side, the technology division. Now it's obviously two different companies, but technology division. And I started to apply the methodology that I'd learned at the previous company. And steadily from there, you know, one step at a time, started growing in the industry as I got to know the industry better across the board. So yeah, that's kind of how I started. That's why I got into sales there. And after that, it's just, it's now like to combine two things, right? I had a natural passion for technology and then working with various customers.
Right. Okay. So your role now is leading a team. Okay.
Yes.
So how did you migrate that particular, transition? Okay. When you go from being an individual contributor and being out there and doing it yourself, okay, to then being responsible for other people, okay, how did you actually migrate that, and how difficult a transition was that for you?
So this transition happened fairly early on with Dichotic, right, when I got in there. So it was the first opportunity I got to be that kind of leader. Mm-hmm. I've had not per se direct leadership positions in my past roles, but where I had a team of specialists that I had to work with, so I had to lead them, even though I wasn't the direct manager. So I had experience in that, but never like in a pure play leadership perspective. Originally, that was a very hard transition. The first couple of months, the first quarters were really hard, right? Because, and again, this is another hero, another great guy that I met. He was my CRO at that point in time. He started to coach me in, you know, expectations. It's mostly about expectation management in each role that you go into, right? As you work. A guy by the name of Damon Tompkins, still in touch with him, still a mentor to me, right? Phenomenal individual. And he said, well, as an IC, individual contributor, you are performing at this pace. But he's like, you need to understand that people won't necessarily perform at that pace. And that's not a bad thing. You have to give them their space, understand how they will perform, and then utilize that across a broad perspective team to get the outcomes that you wish to desire and deliver on. And that was a hard thing originally to understand. Like, it's like, I'm working this fast. I'm working this hard. I expect you to do the same. But you can't really lay that on. So an emotional understanding really needs to come, right? To say, hey, these are my people. I need to make them better. I need to work with them. I need to understand them. And that part took a little bit, right? To understand each one of the contributors that I was now managing, help them build to be not just good at what they're doing, but give them something back that could help their careers. Taking a long-term approach rather than a short-term approach, that transition started to happen as I got some coaching and I got to build that early on. So it wasn't easy because no change is easy, right? But if there is no change, there's no growth. That's the simple statement, right? And a simple model that I try to live by. It's like, if you don't change, there will be no growth, right? So find that change. Try to be uncomfortable. Do something that you're not comfortable with. That's what I tell everybody now. For me, one of the biggest uncomfortable moments was somewhere midway in my career, even as an IC, and this is what helped me to become a better leader, is I realized I wasn't very good at being an IC. I mean, I was getting the job done, but I wasn't really, my game wasn't transitioning. It wasn't getting better. And funny enough, a friend, a customer who's also a friend, recommended, hey, go to Toastmasters. And very simple thing, not, you know, very cost effective, obviously. I joined a Toastmasters group for about a year when I was in Calgary. And the IC that I was before, the contributor I was before I started Toastmasters, and the contributor that I was after I started, after I finished that year off, was night and day, right?
I understand. What do you attribute that to?
Well, majority of our job as a sales individual is what I call the art of communication. most people feel that it's about speaking and talking. So let's call it external communication for a second, right? But you start to break communication down and you learn there's many pieces to communication. It's not just why you communicate, how you communicate, what you do to communicate. There's other pieces that go along with it, as in you have to listen. So, for example, active listening is a big proponent in Toastmasters. When you're listening to your peers present, speak, you're giving feedback, right? By the way, that's a very handy skill as a leader. How do you give appropriate feedback? There's a lot of messaging around feedback, right? I would get feedback. I would give feedback. So it was a different form of communication, but it was communication. And that really significantly helped me, right? I learned how to present to a certain type of audience. I also learned how to listen more actively, more engagingly. I had some of these things before, but you know, like they become catalysts, they get honed as you coach yourself or you go through coaching. So I think Toastmasters is a significant turning point in I had the skill, but honing the skill was something else and it helped me hone the skill.
What other things can you point to over the course of your career, like Toastmasters, that you think have really propelled you forward? I love the expression you've been using of, you know, other heroes along the way. And I'm curious as to what other heroes, either individuals or organizations, where you either they or you spotted that there was something missing or something that you needed, okay? And by kind of bringing that in, it really propelled you forward. Toastmasters is a great example. I'm wondering what other ones come to mind.
Here's an interesting one. In sales, there's a lot of sales methodologies, sales processes. Everybody has a slice or a function of their own across the board, right? Like there's Sandler, there's Medic, there's Challenger, there's a plethora.
Yeah.
Right. I've taken to some more than others, right? To be clear. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I don't know whether it was the organization or whether I self-realized this. I used to work for larger organizations. Even though I was good at what I did, I often found myself frustrated. I was a natural go-getter, right? Like I said, outcome-focused. Right. And I realized everybody's not outcome-focused, right? I understand. Here's my outcome. Now I'll reverse engineer what it takes to get this outcome from this point to that point. Right. And I get a clear picture. I try to make the clearest picture possible. I still coach this with a lot of my reps and I say, hey, the reality is between point A and point B, the shortest path is a straight line. Right. That's not what human beings tend to do. That's generally not what we tend to do. It's not our lifestyle. It's not our way. It's not our habit. It's not what we do.
That's born out of fear, or do you think that's born out of, or do you think there's something else behind that? Like, why is it that, in the sales environment, we're talking about, I remember in my very first job, there was our boss had put a big sign on the wall that said, JMFC, which stood for just make the expletive call, right? Just pick up the phone. And his view was, there is no challenge that making a phone call can't either solve or qualify out, all right? And the amount of procrastinating, thinking, strategizing that people would do, and when he would kind of come in and be like, see people like trying to figure out, and he just tap them on the shoulder and just point to this sign, just make the call, right?
That's actually a phenomenal thing because I don't use that terminology, but I call it what I call it when I work with the SDRs, call it fail fast.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Fail fast is very important.
Yeah.
Just had an opportunity with one of the individuals I was working with, really smart, bright individual, comes very well prepared, does all the homework. He talked to me about a few things. I said, hey, I'm not judging you on how well you do this call or these calls in your role. What I need to understand is, can you fail fast? and then improve. Because failing fast is super important. I failed fast as well, right? But it was something I didn't know or happened. It was just natural. Okay, I made a mistake. Let's move on. I make a mistake. Let's move on. I get rejected. Move on. I get, you know, if this doesn't work out, let's move on. Let's figure out a way. That shortest path, like between point A and point B, the straight line path, is actually a fail fast process, right? Most people, because we're often just so scared. Well, not, I don't know what it is. Call it fear, scared, whatever you want to, of failing. Because it's associated with, like, let's call it trauma, right? When we were in grade school, you got an F. That just doesn't sound good, right? Like your parents, you know, it's a conversation, right? We're so embedded with not failing. And the person who gets an A or a B or whatever it is in school are so associated with that, we don't understand. Failing is super important. I've failed a lot. A lot.
Yeah, it's so true. And I forget the quote, but Michael Jordan talks about the fact that there was a quote that I saw attributed
to the 1,000 shots he used to take and he missed like most of them. Yeah,
I was a big Jordan fan. I remember. I missed all these shots. I missed all these like decisive things. I missed all, you know, and all the failures. And he goes, but it was because of those that he's Michael Jordan, you know?
That's pretty much it. The more you fail, the more you learn, the more you're able to pivot faster, better than you were before. That's all.
Yeah.
It's all the shots that you don't take are the real missed opportunities, right? Is something along these lines. I forget what the exact quote are, but that's exactly it. It's that's a point I believe your previous manager boss was trying to make. Every time you don't pick up the phone, every time you don't send out an email, every time you don't make it that effort, that's opportunity cost. You made a mistake. Okay, you can probably find a way to fix it, right? As they call, the joke always is, you know, bad PR is better than no PR.
Yeah, at least people are talking about you.
Yeah, it's just, same rules apply in a different fashion for it.
But I remember something that was told to me very early in my career was bad decisions are usually less harmful than indecision. Like not knowing what to do.
100%.
Is more often than not so much. So just, you know, take a swing. If you miss, okay, so swing to the next one, you know, rather than, you know, spending hours and hours and hours, you know, figuring out what and where. So, which leads me to my next question, which is, you are now a leader, and you've talked about some of the leaders that have inspired and coached and guided you, okay? So in your mind, I'm going to ask this as a double question, okay?
Sure.
What makes a good leader and what makes a bad leader? What are the differences? What are the key differentiators between good leaders and bad leaders? And let's be honest, in the industry, not every leader's great. They're not all good.
So I'll speak earnestly about this, right? I've had very few good leaders, and I've had, I won't call them bad leaders, right? Because situations are certain circumstances, challenging leaders, right? Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I've had some good and great leaders, and I've had a lot of challenging leaders. Part and parcel, and I see this often in the sales industry, I don't know about other industries, but I'm talking about my own, is great ICs get promoted to leadership positions. Those are not the same skill sets.
When we say IC, we're talking about individual contributors.
Individual contributors, right? Individual contributors get promoted, who are great at doing the sales job, get promoted to sales leadership position, right? Those are 99.9% not the same skill sets, right? But that's how the industry works. Now, the 0.1% of people who get promoted but have the leadership skill sets, such as contextually understanding what is required to be a salesperson, right? During time and era, I will put that in there and we'll talk about it a little bit. During time and era, understand really what it is like to be an IC today, right? Or within this time period, then what it's required to enable that individual contributor, all right? And then finally, have the emotional nuance to take them from where they are and uplift them. Like there's a few key parts to it. Those are the ones that I found. Emotional intelligence is one. You know, general intelligence around the role itself, and the capability to do it yourself, Those are three things that I found great leaders tend to have.
It's interesting. We'll dig into this in just a moment. But just as a footnote to that, I'm always fascinated by the, you're right, by the model that the industry follows of that guy over there is a super high performing sales guy. Let's make him the sales manager. Let's make him the VP of sales, right? And yet, when we look at, forgive the analogy, but when we look at sports, I can't talk too much about American sports, but soccer, which is a sport that my accent belies that I'm probably a follower of, right? There are very, very, very few super successful coaches, managers of major soccer teams who before were very, very successful players. There are, I mean, a tiny handful, right? The vast majority of players who are super successful that go into coaching fail. It's more often than not the also-rans, the ones that didn't really make it as a player, had a playing career.
Yeah, no, I was really make it as a player. Even American sports, right? Basketball is the one I can relate to. It's never the great players that became coaches. It's actually the average to good player that became coaches, yeah. Right? Like I said, understanding the role yeah. is very important. This is the role. Have you carried the bag? Yes or no, right? And all right, what does it take to enable you to get this bag, get this thing across the field line? Do you understand that? And what kind of emotional support do I need to provide you to make all of this happen? Right? Yeah. And emotions are different, right? So those three things I really found key, right? When I say emotional support, I don't mean being nice and be like, oh, yeah, here you go. You need to do this. No, no, no. It's not. You need toughness, right? You need to say, hey, go figure it out. You should know the answer as a leader, but you need to have that person figure it out. Because if they don't, they can't cross that barrier. You now know that there is a limit, and this is the limit. So you need to put that person in a position where they don't need to exceed this limit.
And if you think back through the managers that have really made an impression on you, that you seek to emulate, what would you say are the key elements that they have brought to you?
So just the three key elements that I really talk to, right? Each one of even the current leader that I'm working for, right? He understands my role. So funny enough, I now work for people that I believe in. It's not just a company, but I work for people that I believe in. The individual I report into today, a guy by the name of Paul Bearness, a great guy, phenomenal. I worked with him in the past role. Wasn't my boss, but I felt, okay, this guy understands clearly what it takes to help a organization get from point A to point B, right? My CRO previously, who I mentioned, and the first manager that I had. Those are three great leaders. I also had, when I was in inside sales, my field person, my field rep that I reported, like I didn't report into him, but I worked for this person directly and indirectly. He was also a phenomenal leader. He wasn't a leader in a leadership position, but he was a phenomenal leader to me, right? It's people, in each one of these, it was clear to me that you needed to hold. They needed to hold me accountable, and I need to hold them accountable, right? And if there was a gap in that, in any direction for both of us, that's where leadership fell off. In these four people that I've mentioned to you, that gap wasn't there. If I asked for something and backed it up with quantitative things, these guys came through. Vice versa, if they asked me for something with that, I also came through, right? That mutual acceptance of accountability needs to be there. It can't be just one-way accountability. This is what you see in the industry a lot. It's one-way accountability.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'll give you an example. Even with the team here, I was like, hey, let's go, let's prospect, let's go into this, let's make a cold call, let's do this. And I was like, well, and some of the people I have inherited, so it's different when you inherit people, right? Versus what hire people that I knew and worked with. So to set the example, I went out and I got a cold call, you know, a cold meeting with a CISO. And I was like, here. And I made it completely transparent. This is what I did. These are the efforts. Let's go try this. Right? I can't do it that often, mind you, but I went and did it.
Right.
Because it's to show that there needs to be accountability both ways.
Yeah. I think what's really interesting, almost in contrast to what we were saying before, is that the ability to empathize with the people in your team, where you've walked a mile in their shoes, so to speak, is really key. And yeah, not taking away from the point we were making before about very often the very best individual contributors don't necessarily become the best managers. And it may well be because they don't necessarily understand or haven't necessarily experienced some of the pitfalls, if success just comes naturally to them, it might be hard for them to empathize when someone's having a bad day or someone's having a bad quarter or whatever, right? But nonetheless, that ability to, like, you know, to your point of being able to go to an SDR and say, look, I'm going to do it just to show you that it can be done, or I'm going to do it to lead by example, to lead from the front, is, to me, a very key element of leadership in any role. Just being able to say, you know, I'm with you. I'm, you know, we're in the trenches, and I'm grabbing a rifle and fighting right next to you.
Yeah, I mean, as you climb up the leadership, you get away from it. But one thing I found, I always need to keep my ears close to the ground. Right, no matter one thing I try to practice, no matter how far or as the organization grows as so forth, that I have to keep ears to the ground, whether it's through some of the people that I entrust or whether it's through myself at times. That's very important. Because what happens is you lose sight, right? And if you take a look, I've studied this a little bit, utilizing LinkedIn and so forth and a couple other things, is leaders from large organizations, they're often brought in to startups, but aren't able to emulate the success. Why is that? Are they bad leaders? Probably not. Probably really good people at what they do. That's why they succeeded and were at that position. But the mechanisms of a startup and the mechanisms of a machine already running are two very different things. It's two different operational functions. And those often don't match either. I clearly see this in the industry quite a bit these days, is that you bring in CROs or VPs, and if they don't understand what mechanism is it required to get from, you know, the 5 million to the 10 million to the 15 million stages, you're going to see failure. Right? You're going to see failure pretty hard.
Yeah. And the same in reverse, by the way, when you got the CRO of a $20, $30 million company that then gets acquired by HP or IBM or Symantec or whatever, right? Yeah. FireEye. And then suddenly they're now, rather than responsible for this small, free-flowing, organic organization with limited process, suddenly they're a small component of this enormous process-riddled organization.
Yeah, I agree with that, right? And this is where my experience has been a little different. I work for big companies. And I quickly switched over to small ones. Mm-hmm. But I maintained a lot of the process, the thinking of process from the large companies.
Yeah.
I've crafted my own sales methodology, right? Utilizing and tweaking from a few others, but really crafted. And I adhere to this process. Because for me, if there's no process, there's no winning. Like you can win randomly. I agree. Right? You can hit the goal. You can kick the ball from all the way up the field and might go into the goal. There's good probability of that. But the process is what makes the mechanism. So I've taken what has made this large mechanism that was running at other large companies and now bringing it to that level and saying, I need this to happen here, so that I'm a very data-driven individual. And I believe, so this is also, there's a couple of things that have changed, right? I joke about this, in a nice way. I found that leaders who were individual contributors before 2008, and there's a difference between leaders who were individual contributors after 2008 and took leadership positions. I clearly, it's, you know, the big financial recession, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a clear sign of people who did it before and people who do it after. The same skill set started to fail continuously after. Simply due to the fact that the environment and the transition of the environment drastically happened, changed, and you needed a different skill set from that point forward. Yeah. The ones who did not experience that just were not able to survive as well.
You're suggesting that people who had experienced both sides and were able to migrate have been successful, but the people who only came along afterwards because they've never seen it before and experienced that change didn't, or is it the other way around?
No, actually, sorry, it's kind of the other way around. So people prior to 2008 who had not been in a highly competitive, fiscally aware environment.
Right. Okay, fine.
Got failed.
Right.
After that.
Yeah.
People who were individual contributors after 2008, you had to be very fiscally minded. You had to be very nimble. You had to figure ways out because a lot of customers were saying no. And technology had now, the want for technology was starting to stagnate. I mean, there's not stagnate in that sense, but it was wanting to stagnate where now you had to come up with innovative ideas to battle. Because what I call it prior to 2008, it was, you know, the HPs, the EMCs, the Oracles of the world. We have the greatest features, you know, Intel Pentium, right? We have these, this new chip has come out. It's what I call the supply chain mentality of selling.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? After 2008, it was a SaaS. Like SaaS started to slowly and steadily take over and change how business functions were recognized, how accounting was recognized, how sales were recognized. It changed completely.
Yeah.
If you didn't have an understanding of SaaS as you move forward and how this sales mechanism worked versus what I call the supply chain model of hardware selling and, you know, modular selling, those two didn't correlate. And you still have a lot of leaders who are in these organizations. They're having a tough time relating. They're having a tough time crossing this barrier because they don't have that experience.
Yeah.
I mean, they're tenured people. I always separate in this. People have tenure doesn't mean that they have experience.
Okay. So what three tips would you give for somebody that wants to be a successful sales leader?
Say, so first and foremost, if you're an individual contributor, do that job well. Understand the entire dynamics of that job, right? One of the things that if I look back that I did, I took onus of things that weren't okay. Hey, I don't have a PowerPoint presentation. Well, great. You don't have a PowerPoint presentation. Go make one. Right? Oh, I don't have this. Go find it. You have to take onus.
Right.
Right? You want to win? Take onus. Stop giving excuses. Right? Yeah, if the product is bad, that's a whole different story, right? Like, I'm not asking you to become a developer, but
right.
Keep realistic things in mind. Say, hey, if you need to take onus. And what that onus means is have the ability to speak the truth. Right? Hey, this isn't working because take a look at these deals. And I found that all this was due to this product challenge. I need you to go fix that. Have the courage. If they don't fix that, then have the courage to walk out of that organization.
Right.
Right? That's onus. The courage part is onus. So take onus is one thing. Once you do that, the second part is understand that your job is to make other people's lives easier, right? Whether it's the customer, whether it's your boss, whether it's your peers, whether it's your people that report into you, your job is to make other people's lives easier. And to do that, you have to understand this concept really well. You are not there to be liked. You can be respected, but you're not there to be liked. the want for like to be liked by other people, because that's what happens as a sales rep, right?
Yeah.
You get liked by a lot. You're not there to be liked. Take onus and learn to master respect versus being liked.
Yeah. I remember not the same boss, but another boss saying to me, you're not there to be liked, you're there to be valued. And value and like are two very different things.
Yes.
And I think, and to your point, I think there are a lot of salespeople and managers who confuse the two.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you for sure that there are days when my sales reps don't like me, but they still respect me enough to understand what I'm saying. And mutually, I respect them to understand what they're saying.
Providing them with value. And sometimes a kick around, you know, smack around the head is valuable because you're guiding them towards where they need to get to. They might not like it. Any more than my kids like it when I send them to bed, but it's what they need.
The final thing I would say, the third tip that you asked, is be experimental. Right? So here's the funny thing. We go into all our jobs and we try to emulate doing the same thing, hoping for different results. It's the technical definition of insanity.
It is.
Right? But realizing you're in a different place, different circumstance, different tomorrow, be experimental. And I often do this, right? With, I've got, you know, as I hire new people, I always tell them, you know, I've read this quote, whether it's true or not, it's, I don't hire smart people to tell them what to do. And what often happens is when I give them this empowerment, they come into the organization and they do their thing. And I let them do their thing because this is important. I get two things out of it. I get to see who they are, right? Early out of the gate. And what that implies is maybe this individual that I have given a chance to has something special that I have not discovered yet. And I get to see it, right? I generally, like, maybe they're doing something different. Maybe they're doing something that no one has thought about. But to give them the opportunity to do that, that's important. At the same time, if they keep doing something different that's not working, my job to pull them back in. Say, hey, I gave you the opportunity to do this, but this is how you need to look at things from this point forward.
Right.
So it's allowed me to capitalize on a few things, right? When I realized somebody was doing something different and they were good for the team, then I got the rest of the team to do that because it's different. And it made process a lot easier.
And it becomes almost like a brains trust, doesn't it? Where you've got people coming up with their own ideas and then many of them won't work, but the ones that do, they can often become standardized.
You only need one.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So tell me about Axio and what's exciting coming up within the world of Axio?
So, this is, I would say, out of all the organizations that I've worked at, this is not a, let's call it a technical product per se, right? It's not, hey, from a security perspective, we are what we call a cyber risk economics company, right? We're looking at the security road mapping, budget planning of your organization. How are you making these decisions? Are these decisions data-driven or are you just making them on a whim? We're really trying to get to the bottom of that. And we're providing that data so you can make accurate decisions. Well, because the security environment today, the cybersecurity environment, is very challenged. You're having all these attacks. So what does that mean? Right? For Axio, it means, hey, start making business decisions. Start treating security as a business. Not security as a technical function or a technical cost in your organization, but security as a business, meaning the ability to give back to your organization from a business impact. What does that mean? We allow you to see financial impact because that's what matters most. Right? Are you making the right decisions? Did you buy the right products? Did you do the right functions? Are you able to, you know, the scenarios that you've run, the policies that you've run, are they actually costing you more? Do you really need them? Or is the financial impact from this any greater or less? How can you give back? That's generally, that's in the core of it. That's what we do. And we do it through our assessment, quantification, insurance, testing business.
I'm sure if people wanted to reach out and work with you or connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can reach out to me at unchal@axio.com or my LinkedIn page, which you can share. Ideally, LinkedIn, it's the fastest way to get hold of me.
Right, I'll make sure we put the link to that in the show notes below. Unchal, thank you so much. This has been an absolute joy geeking out over sales leadership, what makes a good leader, and some of the stuff you've talked about has been an absolute goal. So I'm really, really grateful. So Anshul Kaushik, thank you so much for coming into the conference room.
Really appreciate you having me. Thank you very much, Simon. Take care.
Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to the global sales leader of cybersecurity vendor Safe Breach, Robert Freeman.
Once I remember I was struggling and he turned to me and all he said were these just four words. He said, "We believe in you." That's all I wanted to hear, all I needed to hear to keep me going. That to me that's another good sign of, you know, leadership.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.